The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. And just as hopes of democracy and reform a generation ago in China were dashed with tanks and bullets in Tiananmen Square in Beijing, any hope of democratic reform in Egypt seems to have been met with bullets and a message from the ruling military that the Muslim Brothers are not welcome in Egyptian politics. Meanwhile, the Muslim Brothers have called for a day of rage coinciding with Friday prayers in Egypt. President Obama seemed very much on the sidelines yesterday, canceling a scheduled joint military exercise already pretty much rendered moot by the chaos.
The Egyptian people deserve better than what we've seen over the last several days. And to the Egyptian people, let me say, the cycle of violence and escalation needs to stop.
The president was speaking there in the midst of all of the violence taking place on the streets of Cairo and other cities. What exactly the Egyptian people might deserve and who might have the leadership power to deliver it is the enormous question on the table today. It is a question for the people of Egypt and for the entire region. Joining us now is Michael Waheed Hanna, senior fellow at the Century Foundation, who is in Cairo. Michael, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Give me a sense of the notion of people in Cairo, people in Egypt taking a breath after the extraordinary events of this week. Is that the feeling you're getting today?
No, I think there's a lot of dread and anticipation of further bloodshed. I think most people think it is inevitable at this point. Cairo this morning had an eerie calm. Around Tahrir Square was a very heavy military presence. And the anticipation is that the various pro-Morsi marches that are going to take place today are going to result in significant bloodshed. There's an anticipation that this is going to happen throughout the country in various parts, and that the police is going to resort to live fire. So the escalatory cycle continues, and it's hard to imagine a near-term future for Egypt where you are able to see de-escalation and a path away from repression.
Well, I want to ask you two questions. One is sort of a big question, thinking about the arc of history in Egypt and comparing it with the United States. And the other is your response to an editorial in the New York Times today from a member of the Muslim Brotherhood's party, suggesting that it is, in fact, not just a Muslim a protest movement out on the streets, but that it is a coalition of all kinds of people who view what has happened as a coup and that the military has taken Egypt back to the Dark Ages. What's your reaction to this set of remarks in the New York Times?
Well, I think it's a mischaracterization of what is happening in the streets. The Muslim Brotherhood and their supporters have a resilient, robust core. They have shed most of their soft support. Much of the soft support that enabled them to win several of the early elections in the immediate aftermath of the fall of Mubarak, but to suggest that this that the protest movement now is anything but an Islamist current, I think is a mischaracterization. Clearly, this isn't a cross-sectarian movement. The Muslim Brotherhood and their support is now rallying on very virulent sectarian themes. We've seen rising attacks on churches, and I think there is solid support for the military, particularly in Cairo.
We're talking with Michael Waheed Hanna, senior fellow at the Century Foundation in Cairo. Michael, listen to one of the statements from President Obama yesterday.
America cannot determine the future of Egypt. That's a task for the Egyptian people. We don't take sides with any particular party or political figure.
So the president there saying we don't take sides, but going back to this New York Times op-ed from Amir Darag of the Muslim Brothers, he suggests that, in fact, the U.S. is working, at the behest of the military, and that from the perspective of the Egyptian people, it is the U.S. very much backing the side of General al-Sisi. Is that the view on the streets of Cairo?
Well, I mean, the view on the streets of Cairo is that the United States is supporting my enemy. I mean, so there is a sense on both sides of this divide that the United States is playing favorites. And I think both of those impressions are slightly mistaken. It's clear that there's a great deal of continuity in American policy toward Egypt. which wants to preserve the relationship despite much turbulence. We saw this during the time of Morsi, which was not a moment of democratic progress. The year of Morsi's presidency also saw a series of setbacks. So this wasn't a country on the verge of democratic consolidation. Needless to say, when the United States is silent on issues, it is a form of acquiescence because of our longstanding aid relationship with Egypt, particularly the military. There's $1.3 billion of aid a year. And so, in a sense, the United States doesn't have the opportunity to sit it out. They don't have the opportunity to be neutral, because silence in any case, in the midst of repression and bloodshed, is essentially a form of tacit approval of what is happening. The U.S. doesn't get a pass on Egypt, ever.
All right, Michael, before we go then, since you've made a comparison with the United States, by my calculation, in historical terms, once the U.S. Constitution was ratified, it took 72 years for the inevitable, and we see it now as inevitable, confrontation between the slave states and the abolitionist movement in the United States, and that was an inevitable battle that had to happen. I'm looking at Egyptian history, and 61 years has passed since the overthrow of the monarchy, where the Muslim Brothers and the military really parted ways in any sense in Egypt. Are we seeing the inevitable battle now between the Muslim Brothers and the military in Egypt, and that nothing happens until we get through that?
Well, I think it's inevitable as of this moment, but it's the product of a series of very myopic and stupid decisions that have been consistently made over the course of the past 2+ years since the fall of Mubarak. Nothing was foreordained. Nothing was inevitable. There are structures in place that are that make any transition challenging, but the framework for transition has been heavily influenced by the individual decisions of people and organizations. None of this was inevitable, and I think that's an important takeaway. Egypt's transition has gone awry almost from the start, and while we've seen fundamental change in the mindset of people and their approach to governments, what we have not seen at all is that mindset being reflected in systemic institutional reform. And so that's where Egypt finds itself today.
Michael Wahid Hanna is a senior fellow at the Century Foundation, speaking to us from Cairo. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
So how are Egyptian Americans living in the U.S. reacting to the conflict, watching from afar? Joining me is Nancy Youssef, Egyptian American professor of English at Baruch College, and Sarah McGowan, a 27-year-old Egyptian American who was born and raised in Dayton, Ohio. Nancy and Sarah, welcome.
Hello, John.
So, Sarah, let me begin with you. What are you seeing? The images have been striking, and I imagine you see people who, you know, might have been your friends had you you decided to live in Egypt.
The current state of Egypt is disappointing. There's an onslaught of violence by the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi supporters, and the people who are there, my family included, I'm sure the family of many others that are in the United States, are fearful. For the first time in a long time, the entire country seems to be against the Muslim Brotherhood and Morsi supporters, which is refreshing from my perspective. But at the same time, it's scary. It's a terrorist organization. It's not a small group of lovable individuals. It's, you know, a terrorist organization that gives rise to other terrorist organizations. So it is very scary.
Nancy Youssef, your views on both the Justice Party that Mohamed Morsi is a part of, which includes the Muslim Brothers, and what Sarah has said.
You know, I must say, for me, this is probably the most distressed and pessimistic that I've been since 2011. I've never been a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood, but today, of all days, and over the last 2 days, I'm, you know, willing to set that aside and say that even though I understand what Sarah is saying about the Brotherhood's tactics, their incitement to violence, the unprecedented level of brutality that the military felt free to exercise over the last couple of days needs to be more than condemned. I'm distressed today because I think those of us who support a democratic process in Egypt are the space in between these two counter-revolutionary projects, the military's counter-revolutionary project on the one hand and the Muslim Brotherhood's counter-revolutionary project on the other hand. The space between those two forces is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and scarier.
And we should point out that you, Nancy, I think it's fair to say you are a member of a relatively secular, progressive, probably voice in the Egyptian community at large around the world. Is that fair?
Yes.
And Sarah McGowan, you're from the Coptic Christian sect in Egypt, right?
Absolutely.
Now, in both of your cases, this is a small group. In the case of the Coptics, you're used to being, you know, under siege politically inside Egypt. And so your sense of threat from the Muslim Brothers is well-founded. Yet, it seems to me the rhetoric of they are only terrorists, it's refreshing that we're all against them, only prolongs this conflict. Sarah?
Yes, I agree. For hundreds and hundreds of years, Christians have been killed for being Christian. In this case, this is a step further. This is the Muslim Brotherhood and the military butting heads to the point where hundreds are dying. Just for no reason, hundreds are dying. As the Muslim Brotherhood becomes more violent, you know, the military retaliates with violence.
Well, Nancy, before we go, and Sarah has set the stage here, is this an inevitable sort of having it out between two forces that have been battling really since the 1950s, the Muslim Brothers and the military leadership in Egypt? Is this the civil war that's coming and there's nothing to stop it at this point, Nancy?
Well, I hope it's not a civil war, but this is my one glimmer of hope on the distant horizon, is I do think a contest and a sort of death clutch between the, you know, the military remnants of the old regime and the Muslim Brotherhood had to play itself out. And the question is, are they going to leave rubble, or are they going to leave any space for something more positive to be built? And I appreciate what Sarah said. I'm very sympathetic. Attacks on the Muslim Brotherhood in particular has targeted Christians in an accelerating way over the last couple of months since Morsi was ousted. And you've probably seen pictures of churches and Christian institutions that have been burned and looted. You know, it's a despicable sectarian campaign that they're launching for no pragmatic political purpose.
Well, we're gonna leave it there, Nancy and Sarah, but any thoughts to each other you'd like to say before you go?
I think Nancy is right. I hope there is a glimmer of hope in the future that they have it out, but they don't leave just rubble behind. Egypt is one of the most beautiful countries in the world, and to see it be destroyed months at a time is devastating.
I'd say to you, Sarah, that I think what happened in January 2011 and has been happening ever since, just a resurgence of people who are committed to having a voice in the governance of their country, I don't think that's going away anytime soon.
Sarah and Nancy, thanks so much.
Thanks, John.
Thank you, John.
Sarah McGowan is a 27-year-old Egyptian-American from Dayton, Ohio. Nancy Youssef, an Egyptian-American professor of English here in New York. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE and you be a part of this conversation. Coming up, a conversation about Eric Holder and some of his big ideas here on The Takeaway.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.